Good morning, everyone. Happy spring. We survived a real tough Minnesota winter, didn't we? And I think spring is really here. Sorry about the delay this morning. I've often thought about, and recently I've been thinking about what it was like the first time I came here to MZMC in, I think it was 1977, and I came to my first Dharma talk, and it was Katagiri Roshi up here, and it was a Wednesday night, and I just remember feeling so intimidated by the formality of it, you know, the silence and the people sitting very straight, looking down, no eye contact. You know, maybe some of you here for the first time also have that sense. We've been working really hard over the years to relax. And some of us try to have a little half smile on our faces when we're sitting up straight so that we don't scare you off. So, this place, we have really formal days and we have informal days. And if you stay till the end of this talk, you can have coffee and tea and yak with us out in the porch. Although for the first 3 months that I came here, I never stayed for tea. I just left. I'd listen to the talk and out the door, you know. And sometimes that was good because whatever came through in the talk that really went deep in me, I could carry that with me into my day. And it didn't all leak away. So you'll see us bowing here sometimes, and you'll see us not bowing. And if it's confusing, I'll just explain that we're experimenting here with formal practice and informal. Even our informal practice isn't very informal. I mean, it's certainly not what you'd expect informal to be, but we have some retreats with bowing and chanting, and we have some retreats with simply silence. The only ritual is the ritual of Zazen. And we do that so that we can practice not sticking to the forms, not sticking to one way of doing things. But still, you'll see people come in. When Tim comes in here, he doesn't bow at all on Sundays to give his talk. But I bow because it's just automatic. It's so in my body. So today, what I want to talk about is taking refuge in Sangha. And that's what we're doing here this morning, is taking refuge in Sangha together. For those of you who are new to Buddhism, Sangha is one of the three treasures. And the three treasures are common to all forms of Buddhism. They're called the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Buddha means our pure, unobstructed, true self, our true nature. And let's see, I have a quote from Suzuki Roshi here. Suzuki Roshi says in Not Always So, which we're studying for a practice period, "The most important thing is to realize that we have Buddha nature, that we ourselves are Buddha. It's pretty hard to realize without a mentor or a Sangha, but if we do practice with Sangha, helped by Buddha, we can practice in the true sense." Suzuki Roshi talks a lot in Not Always So about true practice and true self. Thich Nhat Hanh says that in Chinese and in China and Vietnam, practitioners always say, "I go back and rely on the Buddha in myself." Adding "in myself" makes it clear that we ourselves are the Buddha. Going back and sitting on the cushion, practicing mindfulness, is getting in touch with Buddha in us. So Dharma is the truth of this moment right here and now, and it's also the teaching passed down by the ancestors from India, China, Japan, Vietnam, Tibet, Southeast Asia, all those countries. And Sangha, which I'm going to talk about today, excuse me, got a little frog in my throat. The Sangha is the assembly of noble companions on the path. At least two people in the Sangha. So we have a big Sangha here today. And if all those people that came for Intro to Zazen stayed, even bigger. Sangha, my view of Sangha has evolved over the years. And when I first started practicing, there was just this group here at MCMC. That was my only Sangha. That's all I knew about Sangha and community. But over the years, my sense of Sangha has expanded so that I feel like I'm part of many Sanghas. The Maha Sangha, which is everyone, everywhere that's doing this practice and whom I can be in touch with through internet and Facebook and, you know, all those wonderful social networking sites. We can now be in touch with the Maha Sangha. And, I feel like I belong to the Sangha of Women Practitioners, so Sangha within a Sangha, Women Teachers, Women Practitioners. I'm a part of the Hokyoji Zen Practice Community Sangha, and I'm a friend of all the Sanghas in the Twin Cities because my Dharma brothers and sisters are heading up those Sanghas, and I have friends in all those Sanghas. So Sangha is really important. It's been important to me, and at times when I haven't had a teacher, and having a teacher is really important in Zen Buddhism. We always talk about having a teacher, someone to talk to about our practice, someone who's gone ahead, someone who can help us when we're confused, someone whom we can present our practice to, and they can tell us, no, go back, try again, or else they can say, great, good, you're doing great, encouragement. But at times, I haven't had a teacher. There's been times in my life when I haven't had a teacher, and at that time, Sangha has been my teacher, and everyone in the Sangha has been my teacher. So Sangha is very important. Historically, the Sangha was the monks that left home, usually young men of a good family in 500 BCE, and they followed the Buddha. That was the definition of Sangha. And for a century after that, that pretty much many centuries, that stayed the definition of Sangha, monastic practice. So when the Vietnamese and the Japanese, Rinzai and Soto and the Tibetan teachers came to the United States in the late 50s and early 60s, there was a revolution in Buddhism and Sangha. And that revolution was that Sangha became all kinds of people, lay people, married people, children, families. And that was a revolution, and women in particular, and women taking leadership roles. So that's been a revolution in Sangha today. Sangha has really evolved. And I'm excited about what Sangha means. And I'm encouraged by the way we're manifesting Sangha today. So today I'm going to talk about taking refuge and what that means, what it is and what it isn't, to the best of my knowledge anyway. And I'm going to talk about the function and what kind of practice goes on in the Sangha and what Sangha means. Okay? So, the first thing, Sangha is where we enact interdependence and where Sangha means building a harmonious community, a community of peace and harmony. Katagiri Roshi always used to preach, basically, over and over again about how important it is to live in peace and harmony with each other. And that's the function of the Sangha, is to do that. And in Sangha, compassion arises, and giving and receiving arises endlessly. And without us even knowing, it's constantly going. When we set up our retreats here, for example, we set them up so that we don't have to worry about anything except for the moment, our practice, our breathing, and following the schedule. And that's all we have to do. And in that environment, in that container, that's where we see giving and receiving just arising. We don't even know where it's coming from. So it's not, well, I'm a good bodhisattva, and I've done this and this and this and this for the Sangha. It's not that at all. It's really just seeing how reality actually is complete interdependence, and that giving and receiving arises endlessly. So not only greed, anger, and ignorance arise endlessly, but compassion and giving and receiving also. So it's kind of like the story that many of you have heard about reaching back in the night for your pillow, just reaching, just groping with don't know mind. And another sort of down-to-earth example is that, let's say, you burn your right hand in the kitchen. You're cooking and you burn your hand. And the pain, the immediate pain of it is great. And without any thought at all, your left hand reaches out to cradle the right hand, takes it over to the sink, puts it under the cool water to ease the burn. That's an example of just doing, just immediately doing without any thought of, I'm doing this, this hand is caring for that hand, nothing. It's just simply functioning. And there's a poem I have for you by Ryokan where he talks about giving and receiving without knowing. With no mind, the flower attracts the butterfly. With no mind, the butterfly seeks out the flower. When the flower opens, the butterfly comes. When the butterfly comes, the flower opens. I am the same. I may not know other people. They may not know me. But without knowing each other, we follow this universal law. It's really been fun to read the book Not Always So, and it's also sent me back to read some of Katagiri Roshi's stuff. Katagiri Roshi used to say, we live by our own efforts, but not only by our own efforts. Without knowing, we live by the support of all beings. So we're alone with others making an effort, but we're also receiving unseen support always. Always, always. So what is higher power in Buddhism? Sometimes people ask me that. And to me, it's the earth itself. The earth herself supports us every day, and also innumerable beings support us every single day. That's higher power to me in Buddhism. So we take refuge. We're alone with others. That's Sangha. We're alone with others. We come here and we sit down and we face the wall and we're completely alone. But the presence of the others in the room, who are also completely alone, doing their practice, supports us. So we're alone together. The other practice we do in Sangha is we eat plain rice together without seasonings, without anything extra. We eat plain rice and we just chew it and chew it and chew it. And that's all. It's really simple. It's not fancy at all. And it's really helpful to do that together. Simplify. 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 Just eating brown rice. That's Sangha. So, another way to look at Sangha is a community of noble friends that has been inspiring me for years. My community of noble friends, all of you. I met with my friend the other day, an old friend from the Sangha, and she's just retired. And she told me about some volunteer work she's doing. And she said it's really hard. It's like very, very hard what she's doing. She's tutoring children, helping them with their homework, kids who have a lot of problems and a lot of issues. And there's a lot of behavior problems that she has to deal with. And yet, she somehow feels that this activity is like the fulfillment of her bodhisattva vow, you know. So that time she'll come home and tell her husband, I can't do this. I just can't do this anymore. I don't know how I'm going to go back there. But she goes back. And slowly the children have been letting her know how much she means to them. They don't want to be separated. When someone asks them to move to another group, they don't want to leave her group. So even though it's really hard, and she feels groundless, and she feels incompetent, there's something there that's like spring water coming out of the ground for her. And so Sangha friends inspire me. Some of what our friends do for us is share the joy of practice, you know. I've heard it said that Buddhism, Zen is Buddhism with jokes. And I'll invite you after my talk to tell your Zen jokes. So, so if you don't see any humor, if you don't see any joy, well, that's not quite right. It doesn't quite hit the mark. There should be joy in the practice. And there's a certain kind of special intimacy that grows up when we practice together. Sitting in silence, hour after hour in retreat, or even just the little bit we do here on Sunday, creates a kind of special intimacy without words that's unique to our Sangha friendships. Receiving support from others who care about us is a part of Sangha. You know, it's not therapy, it's not a therapeutic community, and really we're all here to practice the Dharma, but that includes our entire life, right? Our whole being. So when we need support, we can ask for support. We can get support. Mirroring happens in the Sangha. We mirror for each other. Virtues such as patience with personal problems, generosity. You know, you see people step up in the Sangha, and all winter people were making sure that the walks were cleared, and it was quite a challenge. It was really icy all the time, but there was always a couple people attending to that so that it could be safe for everyone else, because we don't have paid staff to do those jobs here. So people just step up and they offer what they can over and over again, and it's been a joy for me to see that. When I was Eno last year, it was really a comfort and joy to see that people would really want to give from the heart and really follow through with the projects that they take on. Mirroring letting go. That's what this is about, right? This is about letting go of our own personal viewpoint, our own preconceptions, our own idea of how things should be done. That's what we practice in Sangha. Positive energy. We get positive energy from the Sangha. Like we come and on Sundays and we just plug in our battery to the larger battery of the Sangha, and kind of carries us through the rest of our week. Sangha is a place to face life directly with others, to come face to face with what is, just is. Whether that's joyful and beautiful spring day, or whether that's difficulty, loss, grief, whatever it is that human beings experience. The Sangha is other people dedicated to facing their life directly. So I came from a family that where, you know, a big coping mechanism for dealing with problems was denial. And when I came to the Zen Sangha, it was a relief, quite frankly, to be with other people who wished to look deeply at the causes and conditions of the problems and the suffering, and to face that directly, with compassion, but directly. So it was a relief. And a couple sanghas I can think of that fit that is the 12-step sangha. We have a 12-step group that meets here, and there are 12-step groups that meet at Common Ground and other places in the Twin City, Buddhism and the 12 steps. And those places are really a refuge for people who are recovering from addiction and the effects of deep-seated denial. So that's another part of our Maha Sangha. Another group that fits this, I think, is the Moose Lake Prison Dharma group that MZMC is involved with. The Sangha that's just barely being developed there is a real refuge for the practitioners up there. There's about five of them who already have experience with meditation, but now they have a sangha. They have a refuge within that pretty bleak environment up there. Wendy Nagao Roshi of the Zen Center of Los Angeles says that in some of her writings that sangha appears to us as we are. So if we are generous, the sangha is generous. And if we are calm and equanimous, the Sangha appears calm and equanimous. But if we are stingy, the Sangha seems stingy. If we go to the hungry ghost realm or the hell realm, then the Sangha goes with us. So do you know what I mean by that? It's when we look around, we find faults with others. And that's something that's easy to do, actually. Maybe you don't think so, but if you just practice for year after year, you'll see that it's pretty easy to do, is to look around and find fault with others. So if we do that, then the Sangha's filled with faulty people. So that's not such a fun place to be. So that's where Buddha comes in. That's where Buddha and Dharma comes in. Because Buddha and Dharma and Sangha are interconnected and interpenetrated. They're not they're not just conceptual. Suzuki Roshi says we have to practice with our subjectivity. You know, the practice is something we do, and it's filtered through who we are, all of who we are. So the psychological, and the physical, and the mental, the emotional, the social, all those things. We practice with all of that. But we don't get caught by it. At least we try not to. We try not to get caught by it. So Sangha helps us to not get caught. To practice with everything that we are and be truly human, experiencing all the emotions that humans do, but not to get stuck, not to get caught, to be able to flow again and keep moving, because life is continual activity, just arising, constantly arising, passing away, arising, passing away. And then there's the power of Sangha to get things done. There's a lot of Sanghas out there now, more and more, who have a special focus to improve conditions in the society at large. There are sanghas that work with the homeless. There are sanghas that have businesses and employ low-income people in the neighborhoods where those businesses are, inner-city neighborhoods. There are sanghas, a lot of the sanghas are doing prison work. So there's a power in the sangha to get things done and to extend our practice out into daily life. But we don't have to do something specific to do that. Anything we do that we feel from our heart that we want to do, that's giving, and that arises from our practice. There's kind of a love that comes up from doing mindfulness practice. There's kind of a love, and that love seems to be connected to generosity. And then giving, we naturally want to give something, so it doesn't matter what we choose to do. You know, if we're an artist, then we give beautiful art. If we're a musician, we bring joy through our music. You know, if we're a cook, we put Buddha Dharma Sangha into our food and into the activity itself of cooking. So anything we do is the fruit of our practice. And it's all worthy. So I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to have a discussion with you about what sanghas meant to you, your feelings about sangha. But first of all, I'd like to just close with a quote by Thich Nhat Hanh about sangha. We have individual eyes and sangha eyes. When a sangha shines its light on our personal views, we see more clearly. In a sangha, we're less likely to fall into negative habit patterns. Our problems today are no longer as simple as those encountered by the Buddha. In the 21st century, we'll have to practice meditation collectively, as families, communities, nations, even collectives of nations. The Buddha of the 21st century, Maitreya, the Buddha of love, may well be a community rather than an individual. Sanghas that practice loving kindness and compassion are the Buddha we need. I'd like to open it up to your comments and your thoughts and musings about the topic today, about sangha. Or if you have questions, jokes.
I appreciate that you pointed out that coming here for the first time can be helpful to silence. Especially, I kind of noticed a little bit of a change on Sunday morning coming into the porch, but there's some chatter that hasn't been there. It's a little more welcoming, and I'm kind of caught in the same place with wanting to have the quiet, meditative mindfulness, and then wanting to simultaneously be a little more welcome. So I appreciate it. So, and then on the topic of sangha, I personally tend to extend it even further beyond the community of practitioners into other areas of my life, and my broader circle of friends. I can take refuge in that particular sangha a lot. I have a circle of friends to support in I do honestly. So thank you for your time.
No, thanks.
The sangha supports us in lots of ways, of course. And remember in Sesshin, for instance, we're supported by the fact that these other people are all sitting very quietly on either side of us all around the room, and that prevents us from jumping up and getting out of there.
Because we can't take it anymore, is that right? What you were going to say?
But I also had some thoughts about the morning, as a matter of fact. And you know, many times it seems as though I'm basically a cage with about 1,000 monkeys in it, and if something shakes that cage, they all wake up and start chattering and running around. And one of the things that definitely shakes the cage is when there's lots of animated conversation going on before the fish sitting in the morning. So I would ask that people be mindful.
Now, have you noticed that when Paul hit the han for the 5 minutes before zazen, then the chatter died down? Well, I think to grieve and to be sad is really human, and that I don't particularly see grief as something negative. I think it's just something that's human. And I think when we're transparent about what we're going through, you know, that it actually helps other people to feel like it's okay for them to be experiencing what they're experiencing. You know? So I think it's not always necessary to think about encouraging people constantly. I think sometimes we need to turn that inward and encourage ourselves. You know, and eventually we'll get to the point where we can be more overtly joyful and positive. But there's even a quiet joy. There's even a tiny kernel of joy in getting closely in touch with your heart and with whatever's in there, grief, sadness, maybe tears. You shed tears when you sit down to do your meditation. It's not just one way. There's a little kernel of joy in that grief. Anybody else?
The first time I came here, Rosemary was sitting where you're sitting. and I had been at a different meditation center and had left there because there was something missing and I didn't know what it was. And one of the things she said is the three things that you need. You don't need a cushion, you don't need a bell, you don't need whatever, but she said what you need is a teacher and a sangha. And I realized that the things that I didn't have at the other place, no matter how hard I tried, no matter how many things I did, or how much ways I participated in, I never had a sangha. And my practice was never felt complete. And so it took, and that clarification helped me both in terms of coming to a good place of completion with why I left the place I was. But I think it helped me develop a better relationship with the place that I went into, because I realized the value, and that was what was keeping my practice from being complete with the lack of time. Mm-hmm.
And realizing the value made it possible for you to put more into it, more of yourself into it, sounds like.
Or come into a different place or something.
Well, anybody else?
I really like what you said about the sound of the reflection of yourself, is that you really like it.
Good. Yeah.
I think
that was a dungeon. So I think it's important to know that Sangha is there for you
wherever you go, and whether you've been away a while, or if you've been around for a while, and that I know for myself that I've had the support of many people from sanghas from a long time ago, being there to support me, and knowing that this sangha is here for me too, and that once you practice with people, they're always there. And that's really important.
Thanks, Susan.
He was talking about chanting with his ears. And he was talking to me and said something like, when we're in formal service and we're chanting, we are chanting with our ears because we're listening to the chanting of everybody around us and then adding our voice to that. What a perfect description of that.
Yeah.
I also think about the imagery of Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion with all of the hands, and the concept that it takes this deity with all these hands to take care of the sorrows and to take care of all the people of the world, but it's just the realization that that can be all of our hands, too, and all of our eyes that are taking care of each other, and that it's just another hand taking the burning hand to the water.
Well, are we done? Have we completely exhausted this subject? Yes.
I'd like to liken the billions of spinning to an old piece of cloth that has absorbed all kinds of sangha over the years. When you walk in and there's no one here, there still is sangha.
Yeah, you still feel something, don't you? There's something.
Yeah.